Hi, I'm Hall Davidson. You're listening to Speaking of History. We are in Chicago at the DEN, Discovery Educator Network, Regional Institute, which looks to be quite a fantastic time.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Flash, Washington. The White House announces Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
General Eisenhower informs me that the forces of Germany have surrendered to the United Nations.
I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
One day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
Men will still say, this was our finest hour.
Hello, greetings from downtown Chicago. My name is Eric Langhorst, and you're listening to Speaking of History. This is episode number 29, and today's date is June 25th, 2006. I'm coming to you today from the Discovery Educator Network Midwest Summer Institute. We're several blocks away from the Sears Tower in downtown Chicago at the University Center Conference Center. This is the site for the Midwest Summer Institute. We have about 50 teachers here, teachers and instructional technologists and people that work in different school systems, as well as people from Discovery, to learn more about using this new media back in our classrooms. We just finished up our first night's activities. We had a great dinner here on site. I had some Chicago barbecue, and then listened to Hall Davidson talk about digital storytelling. I went ahead and podcasted it, and I think I'm going to put it in two parts for you. It's a little bit long just for one podcast, so I'm going to break it up into two parts. This is part A, and then the second part will be labeled as part B on the podcast. And even though a lot of what Hall talked about tonight is kind of visual, I think that you'll be able to gain a lot from the podcast and be able to follow along with what he's talking about. We will have some show notes up so that if you want to follow along with some of the things that he talked about, we'll try and get you to the right place. So here's our first podcast. I'm going to try and do a lot of podcasts over the next couple of days. We'll see how much I can get done in the time that we have. But we have an absolutely gorgeous facility here at the University Center. Actually, right now, I'm inside a practice room. They have several rooms where people can go and practice various musical instruments, and so it's kind of a soundproof environment. So I'm actually doing my introduction from a practice room, which is kind of unique. I usually do my podcast down in my basement and put the iRiver on top of the washing machine or somewhere down in the basement. So it seems a little bit more professional to be inside a sound studio. But a great facility here. Wireless access is high speed, so I should be able to do some editing tonight and be able to put it up on the blog so that everybody can listen to it about 10 hours after the actual presentation happened. And we'll try and give you some insights on what people are thinking. I'll try and interview some of the various participants tomorrow. We've got some great people here. Will Richardson is here. We also, I believe, will have Steve Dembo a little bit later in the week. So we're going to have some great people to interview, and I'm looking at having a great time. I'll be here through Wednesday morning until I have to get back to KC to teach a graduate class at Park University. But I just want to soak up as much as I can over the next couple of days from some great individuals. So here is our first part of the Digital Storytelling Podcast from Hall Davidson.
Anyway, it's nice to be here. And, you know, we're talking about digital storytelling, but digital storytelling is a bunch of different things to a bunch of different people. So we're going to talk about that a lot. And as somebody who did media with kids for really probably now 25, 30 years, we've always been telling digital stories with video cameras. Remember the old big ones used to lug around before that they used film and all those things. Digital, when elements became digital, they became easier to use in a classroom. That was a good thing. And what's happened in the last 3 years, maybe 5 years, is that now it's gotten so easy since it's gotten digital that really every teacher in a classroom with a computer can really do this kind of work, which is pretty cool. Now, you guys are the ones that are here on Sunday, so I have no doubt that you guys will do this or have probably already done it, but you're going to go back to schools, right? You're going to go back to staff, some of whom are not as ambitious as you are. How many have teachers who are not quite as ambitious as you are? Good. So what you want is those people to also get going. So it's not just learning and seeing how good it is. It's to understand that now we can do it everywhere. And that's pretty significant. So you can go into a school that, you know, has this dusty thing in the back, and you go, have you used that? And they tend to be on the internet, and they tend to be video making machines. They just don't know it yet. So how many of you, let me just do a quick summary, how many of you have made digital stories with your students? Okay, how many of you made, well, that's pretty good. How many of you made digital videos with your students? See, good. How many of you made PowerPoints with your students? Oh, see, that's pretty good. So you know how to paste video into PowerPoint, do those fundamental things. Really, you can tell digital stories now very simply with software that basically is free. Now, how many of you live in schools that have basically a PC platform? Or how many of you are in schools that have basically a Mac platform? Well, it's kind of split. So we have the future and the past in the same room. I'll let you figure out which is which. So when we get started, this is also a very fluid presentation. And I know that a lot of you here know an awful lot about certain things, don't you? How many of you are secret geeks in at least one area? Come on. We won't make you hook up our printers, we just want to know. So if you have suggestions or if you want to chime in, just chime in. One of the great things about these institutes is what you're going to learn from each other. I've been to at least 3-4 den events already like this, and they've all been great. And the best part is what happens with the people at the table with you right now, because they've been doing it in schools, and they're the ones that really know stuff. And you know, one of the least parts is when somebody's standing in front of you talking, because you don't have a chance to build anything as you do. So if you have a chance, you don't have to listen the whole time. Just chime in and go, oh, that doesn't work, or this does work, or something, you know, whatever you want to say. So anyway, we're going to talk about building stories digitally with digital elements. And look, isn't this cool, this little rotating thing? See, if you haven't, I finally started using PowerPoint after many years of resistance. I've been doing it for about a year now. Because I was a big Hyper Studio user. Anybody remember Hyper Studio? What a great program. What happened? Big conglomerated up and never spit it out. So here we are. But anyway, but when you have PowerPoint, things that move are always better. So I put this up here just to kind of remind you that that's true. Like, here's what else is true, is that now there are a lot of digital resources around that you can buy, you can get on the internet, stuff like this. This is one that we bought when I was producing educational shows at a PBS station in Southern California. And, you know, you buy these packs of digital media so that your anchor people can stand in front of, like, spinning globes and big swirly things that are sort of vaguely interesting, but you don't really know what it is, a building or what is that thing? So we bought this. So this is one of the things that we bought. And see, some laugh right away. A layman's crowd never quite gets the humor on this one. But how many of you know what's wrong with this picture? Come on. How many of you know? People are going, he's going to call on me. Let me just put it this way. If this were the actual rotation of the Earth, it would be 9 o'clock in California now, or some of that, or not 3:30 or whatever it is. So this is rotating the wrong way. The world is supposed to rotate that way. So somebody designed this, somebody paid for it, some moron put it on television. That would be me. And then as the credits are rolling over, I looked at it and went, that's not right. Just assume it's right. It's like, that's not right. So anyway, this is wrong. The cool thing about this is I went into iMovie, and you go into iMovie just like Adobe, and you can reverse it. So, using digital tools on an off-the-shelf computer, I fixed the Earth. So, that's sort of what we can do. So that's how it works. And you know, then in iMovie, Adobe Premiere Elements is the same way. All you have to do, really, is hit the reverse rotation, you can do that. So you can make kids throw things backwards. And I don't know if you've ever done that, but it's really fun to have kids go and walk in a room, and like, it's paper and it's litter, and you know, you videotape them doing this. And then you reverse it so they clean up like this. The paper jumps into their hands, and they put it all back into the trash can, which is where it goes. So reversing is fun anyway, but not to everyone. Okay, so anyway, one of the cool things about digital stories is you don't have to have really fancy stuff to tell. One of the things about digital storytelling, and the reason I think it's getting so popular, is it kind of goes back to the roots of storytelling, like gather around the hearth, and somebody will tell you a story. And it's an actual person with inflection and kids can tell stories now in the old sense. You know, like I'm looking at you and I have my voice soft and then I get very scary and all those kinds of things. That's the fun part. You can do this now digitally with very bare bones stuff. So with just plain images, we'll do some of that. You've got pictures and videos, you can do that too. Straight video can tell a story just by itself. There's all kinds of videos that tell stories. Sound can tell a story. I'll show you some of that. And it can be music, it can be sound effects. All that can really lend itself to the telling of a story. Software can also be part of a story because software can extrude video or sound or individual pictures, which can help you tell a story. So all this stuff we've been doing our whole lives, just watching TV and listening to music and playing with computers, now comes in really handy because we can now use it to tell stories. And there's a lot more you can do too. Microscopes, video games, all these things are also fodder for creating images you can use to tell digital stories, which is kind of fun. So here's a picture. This is one taken at another institute, but does this tell a story? Isn't this a great little writing prompt? I mean, this is a... Now, I don't know if this inflatable dinosaur is here today. Is he at this institute?
He's not blown up yet.
He's not blown up yet?
He's deployed.
He's in travel mode. But, I mean, to me, maybe just to me, it's like, this is like such a great picture. What could be a capture for this story, for this photo?
That
could
be me one day.
What?
That could be me one day.
That could be me one day, that's right, or...
Looks
delicious. Oh boy! Oh yeah, that's good.
I wonder if
it'll
be.
What?
He's pointing his way. He's finding directions to go to the Discovery Engineering.
That's a good idea. Because if you ask somebody that doesn't really have hands, which ways they go like this? Over there. I like that. Anyway, picture. This is just something somebody snapped. It was just kind of fun. So there's all kinds of pictures you can do. Here are some sounds that are kind of fun. Let's see if this is working on the computer. Right? Could you tell a story with that sound? Does it make you want to start telling a story? Sure. So sound elements can be really great. Gee, I wonder if that sound on the last picture, what that would be. Anyway, here's another sound. Who knows? What do you think that is? There's no wrong answer. What?
A door.
A door? Yeah, creaking door. Could be a creaking door. What else could it be? If you're a middle school student, don't answer that question. Yeah, anyway. So, all these things can tell stories. Here's another one. Here's another sound. What's that? Yeah, it's like, it's crunching snow. Is that what you said?
It's a cereal.
Cereal? Ooh, yeah. Cereal, eating cereal, something else. But all it does is stimulate what your imagination is. So all these are parts of what you can use to tell stories. And all these were found on the web at a site that I'll show you called findsounds.com. Here's another one. So what's happening there? Would that go with the picture we just saw? Could be the unhappy end of the picture we just saw. Anyway, all of these things are just to get your brain going, to think that when you tell stories, a lot of times people leave the sound out. They know how important music is, but are sound effects important? Sure, so you want to throw all that stuff into a bag. So anyway, sound, pictures, there's some videos that are pretty important too, and I'll show you a lot of student examples of how people have told stories. But let me say now that there's, in digital storytelling, there's a lot of different camps in digital storytelling, so I should at least mention that going in. There are people who really think that digital storytelling should be like the telling of a personal story. That it is the, you know, it's something that happened to me. And if you're telling a digital story about the Civil War, it should be told from the point of view of me. I enlisted, I thought states' rights were important, therefore I joined the War of the Great Rebellion, or whatever it would be, that you tell a story in that way. There's also things that are part of the whole frame of digital storytelling, what Bernadine Ford likes to call summary reports, which is more like a straight telling of a documentary, you know, like a news report, which is a third person. China was, you know, born in 1949 with the new treaty, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like sort of that all-seeing narrator stuff. But you know what? This can also tell a pretty compelling story, depending on how you do it. So all these things are ways in which you can tell stories, and I wouldn't want to pay short shrift to the people who really spend a lot of time on the first-person narratives. And people that tell stories in that way like to say, tell your story first, and then gather all the digital elements you need to tell that story. But I like to do it the other way, because we have things to teach. We're not really teaching storytelling. What we're teaching is science and math, and history, social science, and phonics, and all those things we can use stories with. And if you want to construct your story so that they teach that, then put them together ahead of time for your kids. Then they'll build with the elements you give them, and their stories will be about what you want them to be. I am a circle. Am I a circumference or am I area? I mean, you know, all those kind of things can be told from a point of view. So I like to say, find the materials that are what you're supposed to be teaching about anyway, and let kids build material from that, because you'll get absolutely wonderful stuff to do. Absolutely wonderful stuff. Now, you want to see a couple of examples of kind of fun stories. Let me show you this one first. This is a summary report. This is one, a kid that basically, a middle school kid that solved the mystery of Stonehenge. So let me click on this one to see if it'll play.
William Stanley also believed that Stonehenge was built by the Druids. He also noticed that the axis of the monument was oriented to the direction of the sunrise at summer solstice.
I just want to pause for a second because in order to make his story more authoritative, you know, I kind of like the lights on.
Yeah.
I mean, can you see? I mean, maybe I was in middle school too long, but I just always get suspicious. Anyway, yeah. So, in order to make it sound more authoritative, what's he doing? Yes, he has a British accent, which means it must be true, right? Jeffrey of Monmouth, this is not a British kid. If you listen, the accent sort of goes to Wales and, you know, to Scotland and back. And, you know, anyway, what else is he doing to make it sound, you know, authoritative and true? Listen to what he's doing now. Come on.
According to a legend told by Geoffrey of Monmouth, the stones were brought to Salisbury Plain from Ireland by
what else
the
is happening in that story?
Merlin, and perhaps King Arthur himself is buried there. The most accepted theory is about Richard Atkinson.
Piano playing. If you have a piano, it's got to be true too, really.
In the 1950s, proposed that Stonehenge was built by three different tribes at three different times.
So, you went online.
The first phase of construction
at Stonehenge was from
2950 BC
found some animation.
To 2900 BC, in the Middle Neolithic period. Archaeologists named these Neolithic people the Windmill Hill people after one of the earthworks on the Windmill Hill. Making tools made from antlers of red deer and possibly wood, they dug an outer circle, a ditch, and a...
Now, I found that very interesting because I did not know any of those stories of Stonehenge. As a compelling story, perhaps it leaves something to be desired, and maybe he could have told from the point of view of the person building it. So it depends on what you want as an objective. Here's another story that's told, not first person, but it's very fun. It's just told with pictures. These are very young kids. This is something that just came from the media festival, so I'll show you how that works. Maybe I can get it to play here. Well, here we go. Well, we're playing a video. This is the... No, not you. Not you. But when in doubt, quit, right? Launch it again. There we go. Thank you. No. So these are all, you know, we burn all this stuff. Here's another nice thing about student projects these days is you can burn them all on DVDs. It's sort of a pain in the behind, but boy, it's really fun stuff. So here's a tale. How many of you know this tale of a girl? It's an elementary story, sort of scary elementary story of a girl that has a red ribbon around her neck and her good friends. Oh, you know, how many people do not know this story? There's a girl that has a ribbon. Well, I'll let them tell the story, but she has a ribbon around her neck. I'm just going to show you a 1 minute excerpt. But her friend, all her best friend, people kind of made fun of her, but she had one really good friend, and he always wanted to ask her, what's the ribbon for? She'd always say, wait, I'll tell you later. And they became good friends, they went through life, and this is sort of what happened. So here's this story.
Warning, parents, teachers, and principals. This movie is too scary. Turn it off now and turn on the TV.
So this is an excerpt.
True friend, and now I can tell you my secret. Go ahead, untie the ribbon. Go ahead, Tommy.
What do you think is going to happen?
Tom slowly pulled on the red ribbon around his neck.
There she is after all. So isn't that cute? Anyway, very young kids in a very low socioeconomic school, but you know, they took pictures and they told the story. Now they told a story that had already been told. It's a story that they know. It's one of the famous scary stories for little kids. It's Jenny and the Ribbon. So I don't know whether it's Shel Silverstein or not. I don't know where it originally came from, but I've certainly heard that story a lot. So that's one, and it shows you can do it even with the basic elements. Now at the other end, how many people are here at high school? High school? How many are elementary? Okay, well, that'll show a little bit of both. It's always fun. At the high school end, you've got a little more time, a little more sophistication with tools, and you can tell stories in a different way. The next is a story of a guy who was denied his driver's license by the California Department of Motor Vehicles, the DMV, and therefore, of course, became a supervillain. So he became a supervillain, and a superhero had to come grab him. And now he's about to be apprehended, but he unleashes a terror upon the world. So let's look at this.
Click at this button. I will unleash the mutant freak, Bobo!
We're not finished you yet, Clark. I'm a city, say. Drink the diet. It's worse than I feared.
Master disguise has on simple retro martial arts. That's the master.
Your days are numbered, freak.
Disguise! You may have stopped me from getting my license today, but tomorrow.
Anyway, fun stuff. Again, you use the elements that you have to tell those stories with. Sometimes you can use the story itself. Look at all these fun videos. Very hard not to show you all of them. But there's one that's really good. Oh, I should show you. Let's see. These are ones that have told. I can tell you. I'll show you one more. That tell stories that are important to kids, and they're using technology to do it. Here's one that's I thought pretty significant. It's about a kid that, and again, I'm showing you a 1 minute excerpt, that is pressured by his parents to get good grades, because really, it's Stanford, 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 everything else. So his whole life has been taking those tests and conforming and doing all the right stuff. And he's having this sort of introspective period where he's not so sure it's all worthwhile, he's, you know, with his parents. Anyway, this is a big day for him, so now I'm going to school. Everybody So that's an interesting story, huh? What are the, I mean, a story that's interesting to hear from a kid in high school these days. So what's going on in there? He's got a very personal story, right? Yep, when you want to dissolve into the crowd. But he's got this music element there too, right? Mysterious music at the beginning, and then kind of nice little string plucking at the end because our little hearts are breaking. So he put all that together in a pretty nice story. Again, using some of the elements of video, but it's a story I don't think you could tell without doing video. Any questions or comments about that one? How many would be pleased if your students could turn in a project like that? Okay, good. Not that far away. All right, so one more, at least from the selection of the media festival, just so you can see it. Sometimes the pictures themselves can be stories, which is kind of fun. And this is a good one, too. So let's look at this. Here you're going to see a slightly abbreviated version, but it's a typical, family. It's got a lot of, living rooms. It's got a lot of pictures around the walls and CDs, stuff like that. All the pictures in the room, what's he going to notice? The girl. The girl playing the guitar on the CD cover. So, of course he falls in love. And it's true, boy-girl relationships every place, it's really hard to get their attention. Can you guess what he's going to do? When you want somebody's attention. Yeah, that's right. So come on. Go ahead and grab a flower. Why not? Still got to get there. Love is so hard. Anyway, he does eventually make it over to the side. Isn't that fun? So yeah, give him a hand. Why not? That's great. If you like that, all of you can do that. All of the visual effects you saw there, you can do with Adobe Premiere Elements. So that's a machine that runs on XP. You can do it on a Mac, but you have to buy a couple of plugins. But if you've got a machine running XP, it's a program that costs about $30 if you're a school. And you throw in Photoshop Elements too, if you buy it the right way. So you can do all the little picture-in-a-picture kind of stuff, and it all moves around. And I'll show you some of that later, because it's really kind of neat. That's how far we've gotten with machines that you now buy when you come to school. You cannot buy a machine at a school and not have video editing software in it free. Just comes with it. It's hard to ignore. Harder and harder to ignore. So might as well learn to play with it a little bit. So anyway, that's some of it. That's some digital storytelling. Let's see some other stuff. Software also, I kind of got distracted, but these are also pieces you can use when you want to tell your story. So here's a picture of James Madison, and sometimes I tell the story of copyright law in the United States. So this is a thing I use to illustrate that the founding fathers, James Madison, the father of intellectual property law, and one of the authors of the Constitution, if he knew people were taking stuff off DVDs or CDs and using them in student projects in schools, if he knew kids were taking stuff off the internet or off VHS tape without permission, without paying, what would he think? What would his reaction be? And here's his reaction. He would be very, very happy because, in fact, that's what intellectual property was created for, to benefit education. A lot of people forget that. Anyway, so I took a simple picture. I used Goo, which is a program you can now buy for about $9. There's a lot of image morphing software that now comes with a Mac or PC. This is a program called Morph. And depending on whether you have Windows or a PC, a Mac or a PC, whether you have XP or previous versions of Windows, you can either find these free or they cost about $25. But here's a little piece of software that he used. And this tells a story just by itself. This is his kid. Father did this with his son. He went to the same school his whole live, and it was the same stupid photographer with the same stupid backdrop the whole time, so which kind of helps you when you do a morph. So the father said, you know, here's where you came from because you've got a little rowdy. See, now he's still somewhat polite. Then he gets to the point where dad dropped me off 2 years from school so I can walk and not acknowledge resistance. This is the full-blown get out of my face and give me all of your money. And the father said, let me just show you where you came from. So you can take animals through this process, or letters through this process, or phonemes through this process. You can take anything when you manipulate images, and those can become part of what you do with software. Here's a guy, this is from the Georgia den, and he shared this with me after he saw me playing out with software. This is one that he did based on a PowerPoint that his kid did.
My name is Mary Lee, and this is the scene I wrote about the climbing for personification.
That's
right. Sing a classroom.
So this was a PowerPoint that was put on the video.
One more thing about the setting. Class is about to start. Click B. Oh yeah, I'm the class computer. Guess what happened to me this morning? Just wait and see. Shh, it's time for class.
So anyway, it starts with PowerPoint as a construction device. Now, you can pull PowerPoint, again, depending on which version of Windows you have, into Producer, which is a free plugin, which will turn it into a movie for you. If you have a Mac, you can export it as a QuickTime movie. So you build it in PowerPoint and then export it and you're done. So it can become part of the video either way. This guy did it the hard way. He took screenshots of each video, of each PowerPoint screen, and then pulled it into a video authoring piece of software and did it that way. But all these things can be part of what makes pretty cool pieces of software. Here's more. Look, this is kind of fun. You don't want to see this, but I'll show you anyway. Look, this is from a USB microscope, and USB microscopes are great. You know, they've got 25 power, 200 power. This is my beard. That's what that was. So, you know, it's my little stubbly hair. You want to see it again? No! Okay, here's like somebody's scalp that just came up and did it with, you know, the microscope. So this is human hair, and you can kind of see through it. But the thing is, you've got a microscope, and it outputs something that you can put in your little kit if you want a kid to make a video to learn about whatever it is this is going on. So all these things can give you video that we haven't thought about. You accumulate all these resources, you put them in a place where kids can access them, and then you give them a tool to work with. And in this case, it can be video editing software, it can be PowerPoint. This is a video. Let me guess you what shot this video. Take a look at this one, it's kind of fun.
Because something is happening, but you don't know what it is.
Shot? Yeah. All shot on a cell phone. So that's entirely shot on a kid's cell phone. So isn't that cool? So in New York, they had a video award, video contest just for videos shot on cell phones. So you can edit them, you know, and you could edit them in other software, but they brought it in. So I have a lot of video that was shot on cell phones. It's kind of fun. Some of it's pretty neat. I'll tell you about my favorite in a second, but when New York City, this will shock some of you, banned cell phones from schools, they actually banned cell phones from schools. So, you know, they do metal detectors so kids can't bring in their cell phones. And it's funny, and this will appreciate this. This is the power of the blogosphere. 2020 was doing a story on this. They thought, banning cell phones, is this good, is this bad? We want a reaction. So they went in the blogosphere, and because I've talked about this a lot, they found me. So 2020 calls my house on Thursday night, right about 9 o'clock, and goes, I understand you're an educational expert on cell phones, which is what they want to hear. Why, yes, I am. Can we come out to your house tomorrow morning and shoot a story that has to air tomorrow night? So, okay. So they came out, they shot my family making breakfast, you know, one of those kind of things, and then, you know, interviewed me about the importance of education technology and cell phones, and then used the video of my wife saying how important it was to be able to call my daughter. So that's what they used. They used the blogosphere to find me, and then they interviewed my wife, who was on TV for a long time, and I got nothing. But I'm in the background as breakfast is being prepared, walking around, kind of a Dan Lanyard around my neck. Anyway, cell phone. Because the whole point was, don't think, you know, a kid brings a cell phone and goes off in class, you don't just go, I'm taking it away, you'll never see it again, I'm going to go this. Here's an assignment I just happen to have, because this stuff's posted on the Den site. I want two pictures of a rhombus, one picture of a person born since 1950, and, you know, your favorite color. And I want them all, and you can email them to me if you want, or I want to see them on your cell phone. It's like, oh no, don't make me do that stuff. But you can use those as little journalism devices, and people can do that. And instead of taking them away, we should be making them do that. So anyway, all that, you want to see it again, that video?
Yeah.
Okay, look, all shot on a cell phone. Here you go.
Because something is happening, but you don't know what it is.
So, you know where this is, right? Yeah. Probably had his little brother lay down there. This is where he lost the cameraman, the first cameraman. And you know what? Don't you expect to see William Shatner coming out on the other side of the
That's an old joke for some of us.
Anyway, again, very cool stuff. My favorite cell phone video was one from a teacher that I met in Pennsylvania who was just great, one of these saintly fourth grade teachers who said, you know, they're making us mainstream a bunch of kids. You know what? Don't bundle. Just put them in my class. It's like, this guy was great. And he could really teach. And he had an autistic kid, a functional autistic kid, who just sat the whole time. Something in class finally interested him, so he stood up and started talking about it and made a spontaneous report on this topic. And he said, oh my God. So he whipped out a cell phone and made a video of it, which I've got. Because the parents of those kids a lot of times think, they can't do anything, let's lock them up. You know, so it's like, here's this kid doing his little presentation. It was so cool. Anyway, video is everywhere. Use it. Pull into these stories. It's going to be very cool. All right, so anyway, more stuff. That's just on cell phones. All right, so how much time do I have? It's you don't have to just use devices that have cameras in them to make videos that kids like. This is a middle school video, and the video output is from a video game, Halo, which some of you may or may not recognize. And if you've ever hooked up, how many of you play video games? Okay, you know, if you hook up to a TV, ask a teenager, but you know, you have these RCA plugs that you plug in, and I have a little handout if you want to see how to do that. But you can unplug it from the back of the TV and plug it into a VCR or a digital camera and record the output of the video game and then add your own narration to it. So this is a middle school group who decided to teach the formula for speed using the video from the Halo video game. So here's this. Oops. This is the actual background of the game. And they didn't take off the little device, you know, the little power meters and stuff like that, but they could have. Corporal coefficient. So, you know, they added the sound, obviously, pulled in the video and then manipulated it.
Quiet. For today's demonstration, the president is here going to race to see who's the fastest and made of our formula.
Me either. You'll be fine. Now get to the starting position.
Anyway, so that would be typical middle school, right? They yell at each other, and they're wearing the wrong shoes to do the racing. So you hook up a video game, and you record the video, and you know you use the little mouse guys, and it makes them go like this, so you do whatever you want to do, and then you just say whatever you want to say. And later on, well, I guess I should show the math part. Later on, they...
Move it!
There they go.
I don't...
Then they do the... There's more action. And finally, they actually pull in the formula for speed, and you actually... I love middle school. Anyway, what's a meter? I don't know. Okay, who cares? So the that again, just a place where the engaging video, you pull it in, and you have people working together that kind of get a product that's really kind of fun. So when you gather your video or your stills or your music or your sound for whatever it is you're doing, you know, be open to everything because all of that stuff can be very fun. Any questions about that? No.
All right, we're going to break up the presentation into two parts. That was the end of part A. Come back and download part B, and go ahead and listen to the second part of the presentation by Hal Davidson on digital storytelling.
The Speak of History podcast is produced by Eric Langhorst in Liberty, Missouri, under a Creative Commons license. Visit the website for show notes and links to material in the podcast at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com. The podcast is also available on iTunes. Please email all comments and questions to speakingofhistory@gmail.com. Background music for the intro is Z from James Underberg from PodSafe Audio. Thanks for listening.